This week's episode was brought to you by Jason, Jassi Smith, Fahad Al-Qatar, Carol Majewski, Dosey Rolls 1, and King Ammon. With phenomenal support like yours, we keep making shows every week and are slowly expanding into the format of video. If you'd like to join our intrepid bunch of supporters and Socratic students of the esoteric, head on over to www.patreon.com/thewholerabbit, where $5 gets you started with all our extended shows, 2 bonus stickers, I have a handful of holographics left, and access to our Discord server. On this week's show, we dive into the exceedingly deep and surprisingly cohesive narrative within the first Silent Hill that acts as a modern Gnostic grimoire, a video game grimoire. We discuss a number of things mentioned by the brilliant Install Paul in his Silent Hill Decoded series, but focus on the demonological, Gnostic, and taboo tones of sexuality that link the esoteric plot of Silent Hill to the one on the surface in a frighteningly poignant way. In the extended version of the show, we explore how Silent Hill has historical context through its use of the angel Samael and reveal the theological identity of Cheryl. So without further ado, thank you and enjoy the show.
Trains can be a long ride.
Some of my happiest memories are riding a train.
I know, it's nice if you have a crossword puzzle or the whole rabbit.
We never got out much, so I always liked riding the train. That meant that it was a special occasion.
After my parents' divorce, I could take the train back to the town where I grew up, and the tracks run along the coast of Southern and Central California. Right around Point Conception, you hit this giant Lovecraftian wall of fog. Pretty much every single time.
Awesome.
Oh, woo.
I love fog. It's the best weather.
And so as a kid, I would go into like those imaginatory flights of fancy and... Because I guess that because of the fog, boats would crash there. And so the coastline was legit haunted by seamen. Yeah.
Ooh, spooky.
What? What was coastline haunted by?
Haunted seamen.
Like Silent Hill in the womb.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Whole Rabbit, where we do more than just beat the game for a good plus ending. Nay, we actually invest a few tens of dollars at a hobby store to evoke Flaros into the triangle of art ourselves, getting burnt to a crisp in an alchemical experiment to understand Silent Hill because we read La Milo Duquette's book and skipped all the warnings. I'm your host, Luke Madrid, and today I'm joined by the Corgi god Mari Sama and the Sith Emperor Darth Dingus himself.
Oh, woo.
We never beat that game. We played like an hour and a half. Of it.
It's hard to beat.
Is it?
I mean, I get too scared.
I was having a great fucking time, but the first building was a little spooky.
Oh, it gets worse. And yeah, it gets scarier and scarier.
Just so the audience isn't entirely confused, we're talking about the first installation of Konami's Silent Hill.
The game, not the movie.
Everything is rusty and all the doors are locked.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget the blood and the fire.
Oh no, I forgot my blood. What sound would you make after that? I think it would be whatever a raisin shriveling up sounds like in like fucking rapidly accelerated time. Just like that.
I was going to do that. Damn it.
Now, Silent Hill came out amidst a big slew of popular survival horror games like Resident Evil, Parasite Eve, and the much forgotten Fear Effect, which is actually pretty fantastic looking even for a PS1 game. But so is Silent Hill. In fact, it can be argued that this genre is so popular because of its graphical presentation. They're always over the top, and there was something special about Silent Hill. Like, if you were a kid in the 90s, you probably had your favorite one, you know, like you had your Resident Evil kid. I was the Silent Hill kid.
I mean, I always liked Silent Hill because my first experience was with 3, and then as a fan, I explored the series from there. So 3 is always going to be my favorite, but the thing is that it ties directly into the first game in a really great way. And it continues on the themes of that game. And I think the reason that I found out researching this as an adult that game impacted me so much is because it's not actually about cults and it's not about self-punishment and self-sacrifice as much as it is about the occult and the study of the occult.
Resident Evil is about zombies, but Silent Hill is definitely some other kind of art.
It's also more grounded than most horror in a really weird way. I feel like most of the anchors for the horror in Silent Hill have like some emotional basis. Like just the idea of searching through this decrepit, foggy town full of monsters for your lost daughter is kind of terrifying.
Right, but it's also... it's like it's psychological, but it's no less physically scary than, say, a zombie game, even though that maybe could be psychological at some point. But Silent Hill arguably is purely psychological, like the plot itself.
There's not many jump scares. There's quite a few in Resident Evil.
I mean, I think jump scares are cheap personally, but the few that they do use in Silent Hill are actually extremely effective, to the point where you cannot stop thinking about them and you'll never forget the experience that you've had in the game, because they use it sparingly. They use it when it's important to remember, or when it's like you're trying to feel subdued, they throw one in to throw you off. Like they use them in a specific way.
It's like when you're yelling at somebody and you make sure you get a little spit out in their face just to make sure they're insulted enough to remember it.
Kind of a little bit. Yeah. But you don't want to keep spitting in their face, because then they're not going to look at you anymore.
Start liking. I'll also say that
I can only think of one jump scare. That's when the cat jumps out of the locker in the school.
I think the first time I saw the dog in that game, I was like freaked out.
The birds scare me.
Oh,
fucking
God,
pterodactyls fuck with me bad.
Oh, gosh.
But a better example of the way that this game would scare you is that you interact with the environment. Like you can investigate most things around you. This is one of the first games with like graphics that were of high enough quality to really, really like, build a detailed and believable environment for you
to
explore.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Here's a fun fact, though, because the game was on, what, PS1? The rendering, like the live rendering of that software, was limited. So the whole fog thing, it makes sense. It's a way to mask. There's like a rendering distance, and it's called like drop off or something. But it's like when the things aren't rendered as clearly. So in order to mask that, most of the time you spend in the other world, which is filled with fog, and you can only see things about 5 feet in front of you.
Both worlds.
Plus, it
makes the game beautiful.
It hides the pop-in.
It's gorgeous. It does hide the pop-in, but it's gorgeous. But in tandem with that gorgeous experimental soundtrack that goes with it, in addition to the sound design of the game, it really puts you in another world. It's very hypnotic.
Gets in your head. It definitely gets in your head.
But it's all very chaotic sounding in the background. And there's some melodies and stuff. But for the most part, it's just noise. And it gets to the point where you can read the noise to read the scene. And it becomes it's a sensory experience unlike any other horror game.
A good example of how this game would scare you as opposed to another game is you get invested in this environment, and say you inspect just a bathroom stall. Sometimes nothing happens, except on a few playthroughs, somebody just might knock back, or you'll be in a room and you'll hear someone crying and you'll never find where it's coming from. And it's totally irrelevant to the situation.
Yeah, it's an environmental sound. And the sound designers did this on purpose, and they programmed it in such a way that each time you play through, you're going to have a different experience, which this was revolutionary back then, by the way, having different endings and different effects.
And I brought up the graphics for a reason, because each one of these survival horror games was trying to revolutionize how they presented themselves. Resident Evil and I believe the rest of them, Parasite Eve and Fear Effect, used actual images and put those in the background with the animations moving over them, where Silent Hill, everything was rendered kind of like how you would imagine it today.
Rabbit, look in the sacred grove.
I think we should mention this. It's big.
Oh, yeah, that is huge.
As we're recording, how do we summarize what we're seeing right now? So
somebody in our Discord sent us a meme, and it shows Kindergarten Cop pictures in the Silent Hill school, and it's the same fucking school.
Yep.
That's so fucking cool, and it makes me rock hard.
And did it come out before or after? After.
Kindergarten Cop had to come after. Out way before.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a young article.
So somebody in, they might have been researching a lot of times when they research games, they'll just like watch old movies or something from like Western cultures.
Okay, the creator, Kichiro Toyama, I heard was inspired by a lot of American films, watched them and had his team study them to implement elements of them into the game to create that feeling of horror.
Like apparently Silent Hill 2 has a lot of Twin Peaks references in it. Yeah, and then Blue Velvet, which is by, yeah, David Lynch. But there's like multiple scenes in Silent Hill 2 that mirror a David Lynch movie. So a lot of the Silent Hill games actually take inspiration from Western movies. In addition, there's also occult elements. Obviously, we'll see in the rest of the episode. But it's just, they do their research so well that their games usually are really, really good. Like a lot of my favorite games happen to be Japanese because of this reason. Because of the back research.
Ultimately, I feel like Silent Hill is just the way that it was made and the way that, because the team that made Silent Hill were just people who were failing at other projects in Konami.
I didn't know that.
Yep. They were basically the rejects, the D team of Konami, and they get together and they make this very strange, Konami wanted them to make a video game that was like an American movie.
Yeah, Team Silent. So this explains why there's Kindergarten Cop elements in the elementary school in the first game, because they were obviously researching American movies for a horror game.
And if you were a little kid of that era, it was assumed that you had seen this film. And so somehow by putting it in the game, you're like injecting that horror into your own childhood, and like, I don't know, it's crazy.
And then Harry, he becomes Arnold, the ultimate fighter.
Get to the chopper. Like
also, Japanese people love Arnold Schwarzenegger, so this makes sense.
But I don't know. I just feel like everything that went into the creation of this game, the creation really of the original Silent Hill trilogy, results in some of those rare works of art that feel like they're living and breathing and that you interact with and well, that they interact with you.
Because they draw on these primal symbols, and you'll see later they use like metaphysical things and occult symbols. They use biblical symbols, religious symbols, and also magical symbols. So that's what I'm saying is they use all of these primal archetypes, as Carl Jung would put it, which Jungian theory is rampant throughout the original series as well. Team Silent, they were a prodigy. Like they were ahead of their time or before or whatever you would say, because the games that they make are really good. Like we need to also do the original Metal Gear games, because he's also one of the
time for that.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, it's on the same level as that kind of research and like backstory and world building. Like they actually do such a phenomenal job of tying it to real world things. And that's the only reason you remember the game.
Turn like, off the game console.
Like there's other horror games I've seen, and how many games if you're like, oh, what's the name of that game? It's like everyone knows what Silent Hill is. And why is that?
Because they saw the fucking movie and it sucked.
Dude, it sucked balls. Don't watch
more them. Often than not, people
play
know
the games,
movie.
Please.
Yeah,
please.
The games the games are beautiful, and there's a lot more to the games, and seeing an old woman get fucking penetrated and then split in half by a barbed wire tentacle.
Benny, please play Silent Hill series. Please
play Silent Hill.
So when the creator Toyama says he never really liked the bloody shock fest horror, based on what you're telling me, that's what the studio wanted him to create. But he was into the occult stuff and UFO stories. So what he did was he provided the best of both worlds, which is the kind of shit that I love the most in terms of fiction, where he gave it a surface level story that was horror. And then he gave it another level underneath it with a second narrative that makes
occultism.
It go. Yeah.
Ooh.
And what's crazy is that for some reason, like other amazing Japanese video game developers, they integrate the Western esotericism in context in a way that actually helps you understand the mysteries. I didn't know that until I went back and watched the playthroughs, because when we approached this topic, I was worried that we were going to rehash what Reinstall Paul did. If you haven't seen his series on YouTube, Silent Hill Decoded, you should absolutely check it out, because it deals with this underlayer.
It's amazing. It's so great.
And we'll get into that underlayer, and some of the things that he pointed out. And I was concerned that when I started doing the playthrough myself, that I would only run into stuff that he had found, because he penetrated so deep into the symbolism. But
there's too much.
There's actually more. So we can talk about stuff that he actually either left out because he didn't notice it, or because it was too dark, or because it didn't go with his lecture.
These games are the kind of, I'll call them art pieces, that can really be a million different things to a million different people.
And you can play them over and over again and see different things that you never noticed before. Like I said, revisiting this now that I'm studying the occult, it makes way more sense to me why I obsessed over this game for so long. I was a huge fan. And now I know why, because the symbols and the puzzles and the reasons why I was enamored with this game have to do with primal instinct and ritual, like of the oldest kind, you know, like it actually is very accurate in how it portrays it.
I feel like, honestly, within the first like opening moments of Silent Hill, there's a great parallel to getting into the ritual headspace. It's like the time between when you start a ritual and when you finish it and have realized what you've been doing. Just that initial trek down the hallway to the room where the knife-handed children fuck your shit up for the first time, and way that the camera zooms in on you and winds and turns as you go down the hallway.
Extremely good at transitioning, which is what we should talk about next.
As a little kid, that's what sold you. When you saw that camera twist and turn the way it didn't do in those other survival games, it was like, oh my God, what is going on? That's what I remember. This is when he goes down the alleyway in the beginning.
Right, and he sees the empty doghouse, and he says, there's no dog around here, which means there's no God around here. But that also, it's like the doghouse, the guardian is supposed to be there, but there's nothing there. But then later you find dog monsters.
It seems to be a recurring motif, because Harry, as he begins his journey into the other world, runs down an alleyway, suggesting liminal space. And then he makes a hard left-hand turn, suggesting the backwards path.
Yeah.
And then he's met by a gateway that says, beware of dog.
He's gone backwards, so it means beware of God.
I kind of took it to mean that, too.
Oh, that's such a great point.
Then Anubis, we know, is the dog-headed god of Egypt that is the guardian of the threshold, or the other world, which Harry is entering. And then the corpse on the other side of the gate might indicate that the guardian has been killed, and the inhabitants of both worlds are now bleeding into each other.
Oh, very that's good.
Dark as fuck.
And yeah, beware of God, because God is loose now.
Or Samael, the false god.
A false god, or
Demiurge, yeah.
Maybe the person that it's possessing at this point.
That would pretty much be God.
Or the mother of God.
It seems that Cheryl is partially an incarnation of this evil angel Samael. And so so I guess in the game, you could maybe surmise that it was your daughter that did this to the dog, which is spooky.
Here's the fill in. All right. Here's the down low. And I only just recently figured this out. So Alessa, who is the main character of the first game, she's the little girl that was burned in a ritual to bring about God in the real world. God being, I mean, it looks, it's called Samael, but it's just called God in the religious order. So they have this happening in Silent Hill separately. And then you have Harry Mason just shows up and is like, Cheryl. He like crashes his car Cheryl.
Well, he adopted her. He adopted her from Silent Hill, right? So he's just returning to his old vacation spot, but he doesn't know about the dark conspiracy involving his daughter, right?
No, he has no idea about any of this bad shit going on or anything. And he was bringing her, but they crashed because it was snowing. and he passed out because he hit his head, and he wakes up and she's gone. So he just wanders into town looking for her. And what's really happened is she is the terrestrial counterpart to Alessa. So she's basically, Alessa used up her spiritual part of her spiritual energy to make this clone or twin of herself to get away. Because what they were trying to do when her mother burned her in a ritual is they were trying to bring about, they were trying to sacrifice her to bring about God and start the apocalypse. So that's what the order is trying to do. So Alessa basically split her soul in two and created Cheryl, whom Harry adopted. And so later, when she gets close to the town, she's drawn back in and Harry is led into the town because I believe Alessa wants to use Harry for something. Alessa wants to talk to Harry, do something with him. So that explains later in the story why she's not afraid of him, because she uses Cheryl to call him in. But I believe Cheryl is used in a ritual to, once Cheryl gets to Alessa, they probably would fuse back into a full person, and then got the ritual to bring about God would actually happen.
Well, here's the really creepy part about the cycle of suffering built into their weird Silent Hill ritualism is that they started to abuse the young Alessa at age 7, which is how old your daughter is. So it suggests that she's going to be used again to try and incarnate this angel Samael, who they're calling God.
Correct. By the way, in Silent Hill 2, a significant portion of the game is spent explaining how much time has gone into this process.
I missed all of this as a kid. I missed all of this.
Yeah, me too. Like, I couldn't figure it out for the longest time. And when I figured it out, Cheryl and Alessa are the same, but they're different. It's because Cheryl was a baby that Alessa shat out when she had her trauma. And that's the reason God wasn't brought about by the Order. So the Order is pissed at Alessa because she's basically the only spirit hindering the birth of God by
their
will.
Their God.
Yeah. She's resisting, even in her pain and suffering, she's still resisting for some reason. And they don't understand why, because apparently in their religion, that's a penance. Like, you're supposed to suffer and like really, really a lot and then die. And then, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's like a being a martyr or something to them. But she's resisting and she's like, no, I'm not going to die. And I'm just going to sit here and suffer and I'm just going to fight you. So that's kind of like, Cheryl is a spirit that Alessa protruded out of this to get out of the town and to bring somebody back to defend her. So she's trying to draw Harry in to defend her. And like at first I didn't understand this at all. When I first came to understand or like know that Alessa was Cheryl.
It all sounds very Gnostic to me, how
Cheryl go in, but it's almost like Alessa, because she's the mother of this god, she's almost the same thing, but it's like a test for Harry, because Harry has to purify himself in this process of going to find his daughter. And it's basically testing, how pure are your intentions? Are you going to run away when you're scared? Because Alessa's own mother gave her to sacrifice, you know, to do this process. Like, her mother was a failure of a parent. So Harry is going through the tests of this.
And I think it sounds very Gnostic, where you have this tortured feminine personification of God that accidentally gives birth to this abortive, blind God. Right? Because that's the whole thing about the Gnostics, is that everyone's running around worshiping this supposed blind God. And we've relegated the feminine mysteries to like a dark place. But now that leads us to the Cave of Initiation, which is the first place you go in the Silent Hill series. As you go past this gateway that says beware of dog or beware of God, the corridor is darkening and narrowing, becoming moist and begins dripping with water, suggesting that Harry is returning to the primordial womb, backwards towards the source. It should be no surprise he finds himself blind there. Devoid of any other options, he has but a single match to light his way, emphasizing his polarity and frailness in this world. He's a candle in a rainstorm here. At the end of the alley, he approaches an adult figure which has been crucified with barbed wire to the fence at the back of the wall. I think this is basic symbolism for death and rebirth, the core function that the womb itself serves. From behind, the direction that he came, Harry is assaulted by blob-like children with knives. I think this might indicate the hostility of his thought forms concerning his missing daughter, but in the context of a womb, it might be an analogy for semen or the penetrating proto-life form seeking entry into an egg or alchemical chamber, ultimately to burst forth out from within. And this is kind of a bleak view of male sexuality and the brutality of the alchemical process of creation itself.
But he actually,
interesting,
he does succumb to it, though.
And the scene that
it seems like he dies, but then it seems like a dream after that scene.
And the scene immediately after it, you are greeted by a
prophet,
a cop lady in leather pants. Not really much.
I love Sybil. She's awesome. Except,
yeah, she's cool. But
you know what? According to Replay Phil, Replay Phil. What the fuck? I'm sorry, guy. Reinstall Paul. According to him, Sybil, like, is a prophet, right? But according to him also, she's a bad cop. I would have to agree on both of those instances.
The hallucinatory alley or cave in Silent Hill makes sense because the Sibylline prophets at the Temple of Apollo were famous for getting high on cave fumes and then going into their revelry to pronounce their divination.
And this is like, it reminds me of Link and how you have to go into the cave to talk to the old man. And he's like, here, it's too dangerous to go alone. Give
me a hand job.
You know, and he gives you like a potion or some shit.
Well, because of modern science, we would consider this dangerous and you probably shouldn't do it because it's poisonous gas.
Sybil is like, I'm going to go over there. Here, you take a gun. I'm like, all right.
I like how immediately after that introductory scene in the womb hallway, it starts off, Luke and I were playing the game last night. And he points out to me, it starts off as like almost like a therapy session with Sybil sitting cross-legged in a chair and Harry laying in a bench, and Harry wakes up and Sybil asks him, how does he feel?
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I think this might suggest that the psychoanalytic process is a modern evolution of this old Sibylline method of inhaling some, you know, hallucinatory gas and then looking through your nightmares or your shadow in order to find hidden wisdom. Because the Sibyls were also known as the Pythia, as it was their job to inhale the cave rock from the slain Python, who was slain by Apollo, after which the temple was named. In fact, the name Python is derived from the word to rot regarding this myth. The Python slain by Apollo is, of course, none other than Tiamat, the primordial dragon goddess of chaos responsible for the creation of the heavens and earth in her slaying, owing to a much older legend of Marduk, and likely encapsulates the fall of the oracular priestess in mythic form here maintained by the Delphic oracles. To support this idea, the slain serpent they named Delphine, which means womb. So in essence, the slain serpent pierced by the sun god is the womb and the birthplace of all mysteries. And so it would make sense that Sybil would be Harry's psychoanalyst because that's what the Sybils used to be back in the day.
In the remake of the game for the Wii, Silent Hill, Downpour of Shattered Memories, I can't remember. Harry Mason actually ends up being an hallucination of Sybil.
What?
Yeah, I don't think they really took care to preserve the occult messaging of the original, but I just thought I'd put that out there.
I mean,
it's actually a really sad scene because he just disintegrates and Sybil breaks down sobbing.
That wasn't made by Team Silent.
No,
that wasn't the original team.
It was just cashing in on a franchise.
This is that terrible thing where they just keep making Hellraiser films and they don't research what made the original interesting at all.
Exactly what that is.
Yes.
Everything good will be franchised into trash. Your life experiences will be franchised.
Goodbye, Star Wars.
Sybil was originally a prophetess in Greek legend and literature, and she would go into these ecstatic frenzies, and then later, the Sibylline prophets we're talking about in the Temple of Apollo, they would use her name as a title. So important, though, were these prophecies that if you were a king, you were, like, beholden to these oracles and your prophecy. In one case, Tarquinius Superbus, I'm sure I said that wrong, one of the last seven kings of Rome was like, I ain't gonna pay the Cumaean sigil. So she's like, I'm gonna burn them. And a few are left still, but the remainings are kept in the Temple of Jupiter on Capitoline Hill to be consulted only in emergencies, but they were, get this, destroyed in a fire in 83 BC. According to Virgil, it was the Sibyl of Cumae, the same exact one, who accompanied Aeneas on his journey to the underworld.
Cool.
What's the name of the diner that they're doing their weird psychoanalysis?
It's the 5-2 Cafe. Hierophant to High Priestess. Or as you said, fear to wisdom.
Yeah, if you put it into Kabbalistic terms.
Hierophant. Okay. Yeah, you know, I was just making sure you didn't forget, jackass.
Well, thank you. Yeah, because 5 is severity, or pachad, which means fear, and then 2 is hakma, or wisdom, and so it might mean that she's taking his fear and turning it into wisdom, which might be her job.
It could be. I also see a potential interpretation. I'm having a hard time putting the two of them together, but just looking into the name, the Hierophant holds the keys to the inner wisdom. And of course, you see in the High Priestess, there's the black column and the white column, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of same theme of reconciling your separate pieces, you know.
Yeah, but she also gives up stuff to him, and then she becomes a victim in the end. Spoiler alert.
We're cool on spoilers. Just let them fly. Now, but the 5 and the 2 are incomplete parts of each other. That's why when you combine them together in the 7 in tarot, you get the Chariot, which is the unification of all of those four forces that we see Harry deal with in the alchemical school, where you've got... Girl,
that makes...
5+2=7, High Priestess plus Hierophant equals the Chariot, the Holy Grail, the womb.
So when she first appears, like, she appears a few times in the story, and she bestows gifts of wisdom upon Harry, but little do we know does she degrade. And then she also has these tendencies to not pursue things that she probably should as a cop or like an investigator. You know, you would expect her to go after something or use her weapon, but she gives her weapon away to Harry in the diner. Right, as a gift of wisdom, I guess, or defense. You want it
in the claw machine.
Yeah, but at the end of the game, you find her, and you're like, oh my God, Sibyl, are you okay? But she's like possessed by something. And later on, you find out it's some kind of weird parasite, but she was trying to kill you when you found her. And Luke, when you say that she becomes the Chariot, what is a chariot for? The chariot of the gods, right?
Them, like, together.
She becomes a puppet for the gods.
Yes.
For the god by being possessed. And you have to choose whether or not to kill her. There's like a good and a bad ending, but like there's a bad ending where you have to kill her because she's so fucked up that you can't help her. And you don't have there's an item you can have to help her and to save her. And that's the good ending. But the bad ending is like you actually have to shoot her.
Which sort of suggests that you need the masculine Hierophant force to protect the oracular priestess who's like completely wide open to the influence. And that by separating the two, you've done something wrong. And part of alchemy is bringing them back together. And then if 7, the Chariot, is the Grail or the womb, then we might argue that they're the true parents of Alessa or what's her name? Cheryl.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could say that. And actually, at the end of the game, if you get the good ending, there's another baby born and both Cheryl and Harry take it away. Or not Cheryl. Sibyl and Harry take the new baby away. And so it's implied that they become the new adopted parents of that new baby.
Which is an immaculate birth itself.
Heavily implied.
I mean, yeah, because you never see Sibyl again, so...
You know, she could have died of tragic causes, but, you know...
Oh, sure.
Heather comes back in 3.
Yeah, in the good ending, I mean, it's totally Sibyl's daughter, though, for sure.
Has the same hair.
She's got the same attitude and hair to his mom.
So, I also think, Luke, did you ever get to the part of Silent Hill 1 where he's going through the hospital?
I did. This is weird because I didn't have the... Okay. I didn't I didn't have the attention span to beat games as a kid, especially hard ones. This game was profoundly difficult, and I still managed to beat it, and I didn't even care about the story. So, yeah, I did. I do remember the hospital quite well. It was scary.
There's that part where that theme of...
Alchemella Hospital.
Vehicle. Oh, shit.
Alchemy.
There's a part where that theme of just becoming a vehicle or a tool, like in the chariot, is repeated. I forget the name of the character, but there's this nurse that you meet later on in the game.
Lisa Garland.
Yeah. And there's this really tragic scene where she reveals to James that she has discovered that she's just a creation of this town and she's one of the puppet nurses.
Well, she was going to become one. However, there's a deeper story about if you research everything in the game and you pick up all the shit and you talk to Dr. Kaufman enough, which is the representation of Harry's shadow self. Dr. Kaufman helped control people and entrap tourists there by providing a drug that was manufactured from a white flower that grows on the shores of Toluca Lake.
You see that in Silent Hill too.
Yes, exactly. But in the original game, if you look at some of the memos and stuff and you talk to Kaufman and Lisa, White Claudia flower, they make a medicine out of it and also a drug out of it. Like, there's different things you can make out of it. One of them is a drug. It's called PTV. And that's the drug that tourists come to take and buy and they sell at like the motel and stuff. And then the order uses it to addict people to make them dependent on the cult so that they stay within it and do what they say. So that's why. And then the doctor was in cahoots with them and the doctor worked at the hospital. That's why when Alessa got burned by her mother for the ritual, they actually gave her to Dr. Kaufman and be like, hey, can you store her somewhere? And they put her in the basement of the hospital, which is the final level where you find that nurse, Lisa Garland. And apparently she was addicted to that PTV drug that they distilled out of the White Claudia plant. So she was addicted to that drug. And also the fluoros, and then there's some anointing oil that you use with that like expels the demon or whatever.
Does that create the Elgafotis, what you're talking about, the White Claudia?
Yes, exactly. It creates that medicine, but it also creates this drug. But so it expels the demon out of oneself. So that explains why Lisa Garland doesn't appear as one of those demon nurses, is because she's addicted to that drug and it keeps Alessa's influence off of her enough to where she can retain her personality in the other world. Whereas she's actually dead and she's a demon, but she appears as her personal self because she's addicted to the afflatus or whatever.
You only see her, Claudia. Right? You only see her in the afterworld too.
Oh, Lisa finally kicked the rock
because Harry asked her to go with him, you know, in a good ending, and she's like, "No, I feel that I can't leave here for some reason," and it's because she's kind of a ghost.
That's fine. That's chilling.
She's in purgatory, but she's actually, because of her drug addiction and because she keeps taking the substance, she doesn't look changed, and she can operate like a human being in the other world, which is very, very interesting because you actually don't encounter a lot of other people in this game.
Like, I feel like that
it's extremely rare.
Kind of ties into the character of Maria in a weird way, or at least that same concept is revisited a bit.
Yeah, because she's a figment, but she's actually real in a way, but she's still a figment because she's almost a ghost of what Harry... It's like a combination of Mary combined of what James wished Mary could have been with him.
Yeah, we can save this for the Silent Hill 2 episode, but the way I see Maria is like a specifically designed Mary to lure James deeper into the town.
All right, the name Lisa means God's promise, and Garland refers to flower, So in some sense, her name means that she's been promised bliss through this drug and something like that.
And now she's stuck there, though. And now she's in purgatory with these demons and Harry, who's like, what the fuck?
And Reinstall Paul says that she represents base desire.
Well, she does, because he asked to release her, but she modestly says, no, I'm supposed to tend to Alessa. She actually serves Alessa. She's a demon like the other monsters, but she doesn't attack you and she can talk to you.
So
like,
maybe she...
That's why she's supremely like a very cool and novel character, because Kaufman is up in some room locked away hiding. You know, he's a coward. He ran away, but Lisa is still by Alessa's side tending her, and she's like, as long as I get that hit, I'm going to stay here.
And isn't that maybe a metaphor for how one's desires always live virginal and intoxicated in our subconscious?
Oh, totally.
Yeah. And I also find it interesting how like the other world is like this strange flesh place for the id to hide.
Oh.
It's very much about carnal and like material survival.
What I love is that it was real enough for me to pick up on it on a subconscious level, but not on a conscious level as a kid.
It's surreal, dude. It's perfect. Like,
you could pick up on a new thing about any of these games each time you play it. I really do view them as like their own kind of magical artifacts. I think sometimes when an art piece has had like enough effort and just is made put into it, and it's made under the right conditions with the right intentions, it becomes kind of a gestalt.
And you can research it like this. It's a real thing. Oh my God, it's like a world.
If Dr. Kaufman is the shadow, as Reinstall Paul says, that and their names mean something, where Lisa Garland means God's promise of the flower, then we might say that Kaufman means what, headman in German? So he is of the mental nature, which is obsessed with survival and the attainment of desires. So it would make sense that he has this fatal attraction and relationship with desire, and also represents Harry's shadow, because big part of alchemy is learning to move beyond the survival aspect of the personality or the prima materia, desire, and elevating your consciousness to the level of the soul or the heart.
I've never heard anybody refer to prima materia as desire, but it makes sense.
Well, Reinstall Paul said that.
It's your physical embodiment. It's like your lizard brain self.
Where are we?
Looking at his lizard brain, like, I'm gonna hide in this closet. I hope no one comes in here. I'm gonna shoot you if you come in here. Oh God, you're a person. Oh, I'm sorry. Like, he's like that. He's just cowering. He got people addicted to drugs and got them ingrained in this stupid cult because he made money or some shit. I don't know. Like, he's a dumbass. He's the worst. He's like the worst outcome for anyone. He's your shadow.
Where's that damn fourth Chaos Emerald?
Sonic joke.
You know it's funny. Fuck.
Oh my God, that was the perfect time for a Sonic joke.
Harry returns back to the alley, but he stopped before he can reach the depth that he went to last time. The end of the path is caved in, and it actually looks like a yoni bearing just a tiny bit of blood. There's a note written, supposedly, assumedly, by his daughter that says, to school, which leads him then to the school.
Like, letting your kid go to the school is like losing your daughter. And it's like when she gets her first period in school, you're realizing she's growing up and that you're no longer going to be the center father figure in her life. She's going to find a husband at some point. Like, that's a very visceral portrayal of that part of an adolescent's life, especially in relation to her father, which I enjoy how Cheryl and Alessa are portrayed as a holy mother, but they're also somebody's daughter. And they could be somebody's maiden. They're also a maiden as well as a mother and a wife. Like, it's so interesting how they meld that together.
And that returns us to the Gnostic theme of the God who is the mother, the lover, and the daughter. And the whore, all at the same time.
It's the, well, it's a feminine trinity. Because I guess in that respect, you could say the virgin, the lover, and the maiden, like, or the mother would be...
It's maiden...
Well, crone. They're erasing crone for mother. So the mother and crone would be one and the same in this trifecta.
There's definitely a crone in this game, though.
Because there's a daughter, a lover, and a mother.
Abusive mother.
Or a wife. And the wife, I feel like, could also be... In Silent Hill 2, it could be the crone or the mother.
I think in Silent Hill 2, it really kind of plays both ways. Because, I mean, Mary is definitely a bit cronish.
Well, apparently she's portrayed to be. But in this game specifically, he's searching for his daughter. But it's almost as if it's a loved one, like a lover or a wife. But it's definitely his daughter. But he searches for her in a way that it kind of melds the female persona together. In this goddess figure.
And that's part of the Gnostic Christian mysteries, is approaching the goddess and then realizing that she's incarnated in all the women you've ever met, from your daughter to the lover to,
Yes, they are all one and the same, but they do represent some kind of trifecta at any point given in your life. So you all, if you actually examine the entirety of this game, there's always a trifecta of females present at any given time.
It's interesting.
So we could say that Harry, when he's returning to that alley and learning that his daughter is going to school, he's now reflecting on that dark other world he just exited and thinking, oh my God, my daughter's turning into a woman. And then he has to find the three keys, the lion, the scarecrow, and the tin man, which are also a reference to a coming of age story for a young girl.
Mm-hmm. In alchemy, right?
Yes, because even though the film Wizard of Oz is arguably the story of William Jennings Bryan and the conversion to the silver standard from the gold standard, which ultimately never came to fruition, it also hides an alchemical and an occult narrative. We could say that the lion represents sulfur or the will and the
ego.
The scarecrow represents the heart, and then the tin man would represent mercury or the mind.
Yeah, so the scarecrow would be the salt, the sulfur, the mercury, and the salt.
Yeah, like salt of the earth.
Like, you know how when you get scared, you cringe up and want to go hide? That's the scarecrow element.
But they're the salt of the earth. They're the ones who are going to benefit from the changing of the gold standard to the silver standard.
The salt is basically the final, from my very foggy memories of when I studied it a year ago, salt is generally what you're trying to get out of an alchemy experiment.
Oh, that's right. That is like one of that you're trying to get. Yeah, a salt. In some versions, you're trying to produce a red salt that could be added then to lead to turn it into gold. It's some sort of a substance that changes it.
Purifying some material substance into an element.
A salt is like something's a purification of a substance. It's a purified of a substance. It doesn't like the philosopher's stone wouldn't even, I think it wouldn't even be a salt because it further purifies something, you know? The philosopher's stone is more like a reagent, or like really, when I read about it, I thought it was just a philosophical concept.
I'm not an expert, to be honest with you.
It's something. I feel like it's a name trick, honestly. Like the philosopher's stone. It's wisdom. It's the result of
enlightenment, dude. That's what it is.
Well, once the philosopher's stone comes into contact with something else, it also transmutes what it comes into contact with. In The Wizard of Oz, the girl who's coming of age enters into the other world by way of disaster. What, the giant tornado and then being thrown over the rainbow?
The tornado siren in the beginning.
Oh, by golly, by gum, you're right. And so that catapults her over the rainbow, right? That's like when you hear the phrase over the rainbow, it's a reference to going into the other world.
It's a threshold.
And so his daughter has now hit that threshold. And he's hit that threshold. So we could infer from the Wizard of Oz keys that his daughter has gone over the rainbow. And so he too must now go over the rainbow. And the way he does this is by entering into the quote Midwich Elementary School, where he has to unify the male and the female. But the fact that this is going on in a school, and specifically the school where Arnold Schwarzenegger teaches kindergarten, is a bit creepy. And there's a dark tone of sexuality and what it has to do with knowledge woven throughout the school here, I think.
Even Arnold couldn't have stopped this. Wow. We should start the episode with that.
Isn't there one where he gets pregnant?
No comment. Are you asking for a friend there, buddy?
Like, that's another movie of some kind.
So, well, he has to, well, Harry, to get into the alchemical school itself, he has to take these three alchemical forces, or the three gunas. But once he enters into the school itself, it simplifies a bit between just being male and female. And this is where Reinstall Paul really focuses on it. And we're going to look at some of that stuff that he noticed, but take it to a bit of a deeper level, because he finds the gold medallion in the science room and he finds the silver medallion in the music room. Now, there's an old man who's gripping the gold medallion, which is symbolic of the hermit who carries the sun in his grip, but also pertains to the solo act of sex or masturbation, which is something that kids start to do in school to learn about themselves.
Real activity. It's an egoic activity.
I also find it interesting that the gold was found in the science room while the silver was found in the music room, because in alchemy, like what Mari was just starting to get at, gold is considered to be symbolic of the ego and the solar intelligence. Might be another way you understand that.
And it's interesting.
Silver metal was found in the music room, which is not a science. It's it's an art. It's an intuitive kind of process, you know, to make music.
make music and shit. But not only that, but the old man's hand grips the gold medallion. So also masculine would be your left brain, which would be your right hand, would be your dominant hand in which you do actions. And then the left hand is the feminine in which you receive emotion. So like when you do music or an art of some kind, you have to read the audience or commune in art and be able to receive critique. So that's part of making art. And also the gold medallion is found on a table in a workspace in the science room of logic and reason, which is the realm of the left brain and air and spirit. And the female silver medallion is found on the floor in the music room, which is reminiscent of earth being grounded, like music can ground people.
But it's also after it falls, suggesting the fall of the feminine.
Yes, but feminine is also, it's about being on the floor and sensing around you what's going on in the environment and communicating that. So I view it as being lower on the chakra tree or the tree of life, in that you have a more communicative presence because you are lower to the material world. So I would view that as more of a manifestation and a grounding presence. And then the piece on the table would be more like something to contemplate, something to manifest ideas or spiritual essence. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's more of an energetic thing rather than the feminine on the ground would be about creating and manifesting things in real life.
Let's talk about dicks and pussies for a minute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not just making shit up with the hermit being a symbol for male masturbation. It has to do with the solo act of sex and male sexuality. And we see that the symbol of the sun or the penis is gripped firmly in the hand of the hermit. And it takes
all the shit I have.
It takes acid to dissolve it. We also know that male sexuality has been well studied and is on the table in school, where female sexuality is sort of pushed to the side and is not so well regarded. We can see that like music classes have been canceled when budgets go out.
Yeah.
And we know less about the female orgasm than we know about the male orgasm.
Imagine being one of those scientists who said it doesn't exist.
Oh no, girlfriend.
Yay! I thought that was fucking hilarious for years and years, and I love bringing it up any chance I can get. I'm sorry, continue.
And we see when Harry plays the piano keys, they don't quite play the notes correctly. So it suggests that the feminine has been ignored, allowed to go into disrepair, and then he picks up the silver amulet off the floor after it falls, once he plays the quote-unquote correct notes. So that might be an analogy for female masturbation and how the male and the scientific rational mind hasn't really penetrated those mysteries, or has relegated them, it just ignores them and puts them away somewhere where they're of lesser importance. And if you'd like to hear the rest of our discussion concerning alchemy, but most importantly, the god of the Silent Hill universe, Samael, what it has to do with religion and how it links the exoteric plot to the esoteric plot, you're going to have to pay me $5 at www.patreon.com/thewholerabbit, where you'll not only just get all the extended episodes, you get 2 stickers. I got some holographic ones left. You'll get access to our Discord server where you can tell us what to think, and then we can tell you what to think. And it kind of goes back and forth like this until eventually it descends into memes. And what else? Oh, is there anything else we need to tell them?
Pay the toll.
Are you a little troll? My God.
Eat carrots and shoot lasers.